Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. My co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek, continues to take time away from the show, but it is a reminder to me of all the good works that he, as director of the Hazleton Betty Ford Clinic, and his team does for our community. Now, for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And you can all do me a huge favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know that can benefit from a particular show. Now, this is a great way that together we can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, Answers for the Family will continue to address a variety of issues, such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. And we'll also introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and fun for you and your family. Now, our topic today is not something that most of us would think of as fun. It's the divorce process and its impact on your whole family. And that's something that I think a lot of people don't realize, is it really is something that affects your whole family, and in some cases it does for quite some time. So our guest, who is a prior law enforcement officer with 12 years of service, is Catherine McWillie, and she has extensive experience dealing with family law issues, mediating court orders, enforcing court orders, taking police reports, facilitating custody exchanges, and looking for children who have run away from home or school, many of which because they felt lost or alone or frustrated during their parents' divorce. Now, in addition to her law enforcement experience, Catherine spent 10 years researching the cause and effect of family law and in development of the services of her company, Custody Calculations. She did this to serve the entire divorce community through seminars, one-on-one coaching, and courses that are being offered at Laverne University titled Navigating Family Change, with a subcategory of Dealing with Divorce and Custody, which, by the way, I understand may be the first offered at this level anywhere in the United States. So congratulations, Catherine, for breaking new ground. Now, through the company she has founded 10 years ago, which is Custody Calculations, Catherine prepares her clients in a variety of ways, including dealing with the destructive behavior of a former spouse in and out of the courtroom, keeping the parents out of court as much as possible, and doing so by using out-of-the-box thinking gained from her 34 years experience in dealing with family law. Catherine, welcome back to Answers for the Family.
Oh, thank you so much, Alan. It's a real pleasure to be back on the show. You know, the last time I was here, I was standing in for Matt, who was out, and I had such a great time. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. And one of the things I was going to tell you was that after you co-hosted on the show, we got some calls, some emails and such, asking for more information and saying, you know, it was really nice that you had her on as a co-host, but we'd really like some more information. Excuse me. About her subject. So I think the timing is right that we're now able to give them what they want.
Oh, great. Well, you know, and it's really important. You know, there's so much work being done on this front, you know, on a grassroots situation to improve family law. And, you know, I'm actually speaking not only around the United States, but, you know, I've been confirmed as a speaker on parental alienation in London next year. And also a public speaker at a adolescent medicine and child psychology conference in Zurich. So some pretty exciting stuff going on. But I'm really just more excited at the progress being made in general on parental alienation, the number of unifications we're seeing here and abroad. But we have a long way to go, and it's certainly taking longer than I and many have hoped for.
Well, I know with one of the questions that I'd like to start with is it has to do with your research. I know that you put in a huge amount of research, and during that time, during the 10 years that you put into this, what was the most surprising aspect of your research?
Well, certainly I was surprised by the scope and impact on family law, which occurs on nearly every level of society. Schools, businesses, employers, hospitals, financial institutions, emergency rooms, violence in the workplace, counseling, law enforcement, social services, and that's just a quick run through. What I never could have anticipated was that family law might be responsible for 25% of this crime in this United States. We're talking homicides, suicides, kidnappings, domestic violence, child abuse, violation of court orders, violation of restraining orders, and more. And to put just one of those numbers into perspective, Alan, that's about 3,500 to 4,000 homicides a year that may be related to family law.
I know. When you had mentioned that before, that to me was probably the most shocking statistic. You know, as an investigator myself, I was aware of the kidnapping issues, and I was aware of the violation of court orders. Those things I got, but to take it to that next level and to realize, 25% of all crime, and to go into the fact that it's involved in between 3,500 and 4,000 homicides, this is something that I'm just so glad that you're taking the effort that you're doing to set up ways in which people can do this so that it's not as difficult on the family, it doesn't cause as much anxiety. And to me, this is what we should be doing, as opposed to having a system that in many cases appears to be people with attorneys that are flaming, that are adding fire to the flames or adding gasoline to the flames and just making it get worse and worse and worse. So again, I want to thank you for really doing what it is that you're doing, because I think it's taking us away from, hopefully, many of those statistics.
Well, I certainly hope so, and that's what I work for.
All right. Well, now you mentioned a variety of different issues, which, again, I was surprised about some of them. So let's talk about some of these issues, beginning with the financial markets and how they're impacted by family law.
Well, this is a good one to start with, only because the ability to maintain your financial strength during divorce is critical to, a good outcome or, as reasonable outcome as you can expect. And it also is dependent upon your ability to go forward and care for your children, provide shelter and home and food and clothes and quality of life. So it's very important, that parents are able to really structure their financial strength around important decisions. And slow pays on credit cards, loans, mortgages, lines of credit, vehicles, second homes, recreational vehicles, parents can't do that easily when they go through the divorce process. We see repossessions, foreclosures, plummeting credit scores, and that all hurts families tremendously. And it takes years to recover from, if at all. And as the cost for the divorce and custody increases, custody evaluations, psych reports, along with orders for alimony and child support, it makes such a difficult financial hardship for parents that they struggle. It's a domino effect. The financials affect the emotional, affect the case, affect the care with the children, and so on. And it's just a spiral. So it's rare that a parent can retain a good payment history, they can retain assets. And once they lose their legal counsel, then they think their case can't get any worse, but actually that's the next stepping stone to spiraling out of control. Because as parents say, I can do just as good a job as the attorney. Well, that may be the case initially, but it never is the case, with few exceptions, in the long run. And the case just gets worse, and parents end up filing for bankruptcy. And family law is really one of the top reasons individuals file for bankruptcy. And again, as I said, the emotions, the care for the children, all of that, and even your ability to hold the job can all be traced back to the financial aspects and strength of a family.
Yeah, and one of the areas that we see it in our adolescent services company has to do with schooling, you know, to where there's either arguments over schooling, or the kids were in private school, now they can't afford it, they're now having to go to a different school, or which school do they go to. So tell us a little bit about that aspect of it. So what about schools, and how are they impacted, and how does that then carry over to the children?
Well, there's so many children being enrolled and unenrolled in schools in violation of court orders. There's disturbances on school grounds at school functions, graduation, open house, parent-teacher conferences, parents removing children from school early during the parenting time of the other parent, or neither parent showing up at all. I personally responded to radio calls where children were left at school because neither parent showed up. Each parent saying it was the responsibility of the child, of the other parent. And some of these children are very, very young. They cry and cling to me as I held them, and the teacher explaining they're unable to reach either parent. And it's just heartbreaking, and it's so hard on the children. Then there's the other aspect of parents being denied graduation tickets by the other parent. And so parents are having to spend a tremendous amount of time and effort going to district offices to coordinate tickets so they can attend their own children's graduation. In fact, at certain times of the year, graduation tickets are 30% of my business. So as a result of all of these actions, school districts have had to set up whole departments to deal with all of these issues. So instead of dealing of money going to the education of children, money is being spent on family law. And these numbers, they're not small either. When you consider this is being done at a significant number of school districts around the country in every single state, it's in the millions of dollars. So were you surprised by some of this information when we talked about it?
Yes. And actually, in some areas, yes. I mean, as far as, especially as it relates to the trickle-down effect, you know, which is, you know, this is affecting crime, this is affecting, you know, our, you know, not only our personal budgets, that part I realize, but then taking it one step further is that now it's also taking more taxpayer dollars, you know, either paying for schools, paying for more for courts. You know, it's a huge thing that just doesn't seem to get enough attention, at least in the right way.
No, not at all. In fact, there's rare, you know, there's just only now becoming more recognition of some of these issues.
Now, one of the areas that I think we need to talk about, and I thought about it just as you were saying, schools, taking them in, taking them out. And again, that's one of the areas where me as an investigator gets involved. But let's talk about the abductions, because I think this is one of the worst things that parents do, in essence, to get back at the other parent. And as you know, it's a subject that I'm familiar with because I've returned many parentally abducted children from around the world. So share with our audience some of the statistics about how much this is really taking place.
Well, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, known as NCMEC, issued a report that of the more than 300 children reported missing, 30,000 were abductions. And of this number, 92 to 95% were abducted by family members or persons known to the family. Only 5 to 7% were abducted by strangers. Now, this was prior to 2002. After 2012, NCMEC adjusted those percentages to reflect that only 1% of children abducted were taken by strangers. 99% were abducted by family members or persons known to the family. Now, that's a pretty significant shift in stranger abductions to family members or persons known to the family. Now, the following analogy was used in trying to paint a picture of just how severe the issue of abduction is in this country. So one author said, so many children are abducted on an average day by family members or persons known to the family that they could fill a school bus every other hour, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year.
Yeah, that's an incredible picture to think about that, and to not take into consideration the psychological effects that is having on the children. You know, the idea of raising children is to put as many people that love and care about them into their life. It's certainly not to rip them out of a life and to take them away from as many people, you know, as possible. So, yeah, it's an incredibly frustrating thing. I can think of a particular case that I consulted on where it was the father had taken the girl and went out of state and eventually out of the country. But he shaved her head and changed her name and made her live as a boy so that nobody would suspect when he was taking her and enrolling her in a different school and under a different name and so on. So here is a girl that from about the age of, and I believe it was about 7 to about 12, is being told to live a lie. You know, and psychologically, how is this affecting someone? But again, the parent in this case is not looking at the child's best interest. There is some distorted thought process going on in that parent's life that is obviously very selfish and hurtful.
Well, and the abduction issues only increase when, you know, and that is such a serious situation. And parents who have dual citizenship, or they marry someone who has family and financial strength outside the United States, the numbers increase for those parents on a possibility of abduction. So I spend a lot of time with parents on those issues, passport, you know, being submitted or withdrawn, blocking passports, all sorts of steps to preempt any attempt or to block any attempt. So a lot is being done on that, and I have actually been interviewed by an office by Congress doing a report on this issue on what I thought might be, you know, a good idea on a no-fly list. It certainly wasn't my idea. I was just one of the people they contacted. But just, you know, from a law enforcement standpoint, what was some of the input I could provide, you know, to support any legislation that might be dealing with that issue. So I was very privileged to be able to put some of that information into hands that might be beneficial in passing some laws to further reduce the number of abductions that we have internationally in this country and domestically.
Well, and that's one of the things that I love about your work and what it is you're doing when you're working with families is you're providing preventative things, you know, by telling them, you know, here's what's going to happen with the, you know, the passports. We're going to do this, we're going to do that. But it's that thought of we're going to take care of this up front in the same sense or psychologically how to deal with these things or financially, but it's all how can we deal with this up front so that we're not having to deal with the situations or they're not having to hire somebody like me at a later date to go fly into a country that may not have signed the Hague Treaty to try to get their children back. So I just think it's incredible that you're doing that. And the more families that can get that kind of help, I think the less we're going to have these other problems.
Well, that was really the key focus of my research is instead of, I worked backwards. I said, if these are all the issues we know that occur in family law, where do we need to intercede to prevent them from occurring? Why are we trying to fix problems after they occur when we can simply, you know, get involved and do what we need to do before they occur to put in place the measures that we need to protect not only the children, but the parents too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I could do a whole show just specific on that issue, but we've got so much we want to cover and provide to parents right now.
Well, and which actually makes me think of another subject, and that is social services. And I know that that's a hot button for many, and and it really shouldn't be, or should it? So what's your thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely, it's a hot button, and absolutely it should be. You know, you can't pick up a paper or listen to the radio or the news without hearing something about social services on a regular basis. Not surprising when we consider that we're talking about an agency that impacts 6 million children yearly in that country. That's actually more children than the entire countries of Norway, Sweden, Finland, Belgium, Luxembourg, and Denmark combined. That's a big wow. number, and the ripple effect is even greater. Now, you know, unfortunately, due to time constraints, I'm barely able to touch upon some of the issues just on this subject. But, you know, certainly social services has a tough job, but it's getting tougher, and we need to do a better job. And part of that is due to false allegations. But let me, before I head off into that direction, let me go back and say, so social services conducts 3.5 million child abuse investigations nationally, and that impacts the 6 million children. But unofficially, the number of investigations is closer to 12 million child abuse investigations, and much of this is due to cross-reporting by social services law enforcement, who then conduct a separate and additional investigation from social services. This was meant to be done as an additional layer of protection to ensure that no child falls between the cracks, but clearly that has, you know, especially in that recent case where, you know, that 7-year-old boy was terribly, terribly, you know, died a terrible death at the hands of the mother's boyfriend and was convicted, thank God. But we should have caught that. That never should have happened. But in addition to this, you know, type of layering, there's also other agencies, such as schools, who also cross-report with law enforcement. Now, 40% of these investigations are identified as inconclusive. That's the term that means that social services and the police department, or police department, is unable to prove or disprove the allegation. 90% of this group is now believed to be parents or others acting on their behalf using investigations to gain an advantage in custody. Now, this is an unofficial assessment, but these numbers come from actual social workers in the field. Now, Matt, I know you've had a lot of experience dealing with social services and families going through divorce and custody issues. You know, what does that look like for you?
Well,
does any of this sound familiar to you?
Well, yeah, unfortunately it has. And so this is Alan. Now, some of the uglier ones that we've gotten involved in really have to do with more of the false accusations. And one in particular that I can think of that was really bad, but it was in because of a divorce custody situation, a father convinced his teenage daughter to make a claim against the boyfriend or fiance of the mother, as you know, she was already living with a guy. And anyway, the daughter made this claim, and social services came out and not only took the stepfather away, but they took his biological children out of the home because they felt that they were in danger as well. So here you have another family that is completely torn apart. The children are taken to Orangewood, and the father is taken in for questioning. And as it turned out, once the investigation came in, this was something that was a plan that was devised by the father in an attempt to get custody of his biological children. I mean, it's just, you know, there needs to be a way to go in and to investigate. And I realize that we need to keep people safe. But at the same time, I think when there's a custody situation involved, just jumping immediately to conclusions, because in that situation, there was no rape kit ever done before doing this, you know, which, again, was one of the things that was done afterwards, which then proved that it never happened. So anyway, so yes, unfortunately, there's been some very ugly experiences that we've seen in this area.
Well, and the reason why I think this is such an important subject is because parents enter the family law process naive, uneducated, and next thing they know, they're facing, you know, false child abuse allegations. And instead of these issues occurring like after 8 or 9 years, like what we used to see some years ago, now it's the fastest, shortest, quickest, least expensive route to sole legal and physical custody for either the mother or the father. So we're actually seeing an increase in the number of false child abuse investigations, false restraining orders, false domestic violence restraining or false domestic violence at the onset of the divorce. I am want to make very clear, I am not saying these issues do not exist. I'm just saying that there are parents out there that are using it intentionally with the sole purpose to gain sole legal and physical custody of the children and to cut the other parent out of their child's life. And that's wrong. And parents need to know that before they file. They need to anticipate. And that's why, you know, getting a good attorney, getting a good coach, you need more than just an attorney nowadays to really talk and get parents educated. And that's why these courses at Laverne University are so important.
Now, I know that in learning more about some of the things you were doing, there was a particular case that you had spoke on, I believe it was in February of 2016, in regards to a parent that was released from prison. Share with us a little bit about that one in regards to the false allegations.
Well, you know, actually, I have so many of those cases, and they're horrific. I mean, one parent has been arrested 3 times. And he had a wonderful relationship with his children, was actively involved in his church, actively involved, you know, in every aspect of their child's life. And here he is now, 3 times, you know, having been arrested, false allegations. And, you know, we were very successful in showing the situation. But each time his custody was interfered with, his... you know, he had no contact with his children. He then goes to reunification. And by the way, I have to tell you, normally I don't refer to a client's gender because I represent just as many fathers as I do mothers. And my basis is if it's the father that's violating the court order or filing false allegations, they should be going to jail. If the mother files false allegations and it can be proved, they should go to jail. But because we have no consequences for these actions, that's why we're seeing an increase. But I have another parent who's facing false sexual abuse allegations. And by the way, I'm not just talking about fathers. Mothers, mm-hmm. I've been approached by a mother who's in prison, convicted of sexual child abuse against her daughter. And she's in jail seeking to, you know, seek a correction to her situation. And there's a couple of colleagues involved in that. And it's just, you know, that's not normally what I get involved with, but it's just becoming the norm now. It's almost becoming so acceptable that we're not recognizing the danger that we're providing, the lessons we're giving to our children about bullies, about lying, about power and control, about protecting victims. We're teaching children absolutely the opposite of everything that we stand for families in this country. Right, wrong, moral decisions. You know, protecting our children, protecting from adults and children from being bullied. We've actually created in family law the biggest monster. And instead of putting it on the families, we should be putting it back on the judges. I'm not saying their job is easy because we're expecting them to be part lie detector, part counselor, part therapist, and part, you know, see into the future. But we need to do a better job of holding parents accountable. This free-for-all environment that we've corrected in family law in the interest of best children is doing more harm than we could have ever done intentionally in this policy. I just disagree. And we need to go back to the Constitution. But I'm getting a little bit off my target. The point is, families are just, it's getting worse. It's not getting better. And I saw that over my career with LAPD, and I've seen it over my career just in the last 10 years.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and I don't think you got off target at all, because I think the bottom line is that is the target. you know, and we have gotten so far away from it. But for everybody out there, please stay with us. We are going to take a break. But I want to let you know that if you want to follow along by going to Catherine's website, you can go to custodycalculations.com/contact. That's custodycalculations.com/contact. If you're at a computer, you can open up another window. You can follow along with us. If you're driving, you know, all of this information will be on our site at answersforthefamily.com. We're going to take a break. Stay with us. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. And our topic today is the divorce process and its impact on your whole family. Our guest is Catherine McWillie, and her company is Custody Calculations. Now, Catherine, while we were went to break, we have an email question that has come in that goes right into the abduction issue. And this one says, I agree that child abduction is a serious step for any parent to take, but how many parents do you believe have justifiably taken their kids out of harmful situations? I, for one, would like to say that I am confident in our justice system to determine these matters, but I know full well as a legal aide in a family law firm that influence and money can be powerful factors in how people are dealt with in our court system. And this is from Brenda in California.
Well, Brenda, I certainly understand the reason you're asking the question. It's a tough one, but obviously as a my background as a law enforcement officer, you're asking me whether I believe a parent is justified in going outside the system and abducting their child. You know, it goes against everything that I believe, and, you know, I certainly can't say that I would support that. Do I think that I've heard horrific stories where the justice system has failed parents? Absolutely. Do I think that there's been attorneys that have not always been able to represent their client that leads to a proper outcome because the other attorney may be better, the other person's able to retain representation, or the district attorney's office didn't have the proper evidence that they needed, or somewhere in the system we failed? Absolutely. I have to say that my heart goes out, and I would absolutely understand the conflict that any parent would feel, any law enforcement would feel. But do I say that I could get behind that decision? I don't know that I could come down and say yes. I don't know that I could come down and say no, but I guess that's a tough one. I don't think that I could say yes.
Well, and to add a little bit to that, what I can say is having worked on a lot of international cases, that is a bigger problem in other countries. Fortunately, there is something called the Hague Treaty, and in most cases, we can get one country to assist us in honoring the court order from our country or from another country that is also a Hague signatory. But there are also countries that have not signed the Hague and that money, power, and even gender, you know, makes a huge difference, and they will shelter them. So I, in the same way that you're saying, Catherine, I understand what they're saying. I don't see it as much here in this country, but unfortunately in other countries I have seen it, and it is a problem.
Well, let me just add one more thing. You know, in 10 years of clients calling me saying they want to call social services, their child has been abused, then we go through the outline of what it is that occurred during the abuse. And not once in the 10 years that parents have called me have they then felt the need to file a child abuse investigation. Certainly there's cases where very well-meaning parents emotionally affected, their safety concerns for their children are heightened, their context for normal is sort of thrown out the window during a divorce. And I have clients that I so believe in, and luckily they called me, but not once in 10 years has any single one client felt the need after speaking with me to file a child abuse investigation. There was nobody reasonable outside myself, you know, that they could call and get advice on that really, and not once, and this is important to understand too, not once did any parent regret that decision. Now, I'm certainly not talking about maybe the cases that you wish to speak to, Beth, where the abuse was so severe, like the child that was locked in the cabinet that ultimately died at 7 years old. You know, that's a complete failure of the system. And, you know, but again, we can't become vigilantes. We just can't, because it's not always the correct perceptive. What if there's some other factor that you don't know about that might have come into play? And there's so many agencies out there now, too, that can help parents early on. But one of the other aspects, of course, is the domestic violence, either male or female, that comes into play in these scenarios. So, you know, tough question, understand, just, you know, would have a hard time supporting that.
Catherine, you know, another subject that I saw that you addressed in your research was the suicide and how that is connected to some family law cases. Let's talk a little bit about that, and can you share some of those statistics you've come up with?
Okay, so, you know, suicide is the 10th leading cause of death, with the rates at their highest in 30 years in this country. And the increase in double digits was beginning in 2006 after falling off and stabilizing in the 1950s. And that's from the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention. Yearly, there's about 10,500 suicides related to family law. That's adults and children combined. Of this number, children comprise 1,125 suicides. That's 1,125 suicides more than should be occurring related to family law. Now, I'm talking about young children in some cases. For instance, on June 3rd in 2013 in Chayette, Idaho, a young child, only 6 years old, upset over their parents' divorce, committed suicide. And there was four detectives assigned to work this case exclusively to determine if the child did in fact commit suicide. It was beyond the comprehension of anyone in this community that a child so young could be capable of such an act. The child had previously been watching cartoons on the TV in the living room when he walked into the kitchen, and taking off his belt, the little boy tied it into a makeshift noose and hung himself from the freezer handle of the refrigerator. His 7-year-old sister found him. His mother and stepfather were in the upstairs bedroom at the time of the death. And the story made headlines as far away as England. So I know that you've dealt with suicide as well in family law, haven't you?
Yeah. And situations where it's been the parents, and also situations where it's been the teens. And I've not dealt with anything that's where someone was that young, but in dealing with a case where a teenager, after going back and forth, and one of the things that the teenager wrote a note, but it was all of the hateful messages that each parent was spreading about the other, that no matter, you know, one of the things the child had said was, no matter which home they went to, all they heard was all this hateful information about the parent who's not there at that moment. And I think parents need to hear this, because, you know, if you make that your focus, you're putting that on your kids. And, you know, and again, and I, you know, consulted on a case many years ago where that's what the child wrote before taking their own life.
Terrible. Mm-hmm. It's all so unnecessary. I mean, we need to do a much better job for everyone's sake.
So, Catherine, and I know that, you know, your time either with LAPD or now as a, you know, as a divorce coach, I'm sure you've seen a lot. Just share with our listeners just some of your observations, you know, because I know this is spanning now over 34 years. And what you know, share with us what you've seen, but also share with us where we're headed.
Well, you know, Al, it's just too much, you know, even for officers. But, you know, let me give some examples. Like, do you remember the train derailment in Los Angeles in 2005? Mm-hmm. 11 people were killed, yeah, and over 200 injured. That train derailment was related to family law. The father's name was Juan Alvarez, and he was pending a divorce. He was depressed. He stabbed himself in the chest and slashed his wrist in a failed suicide attempt. And he was determined to succeed, to take his life. So he came up with this brilliant idea to park his vehicle on the train tracks. As the train approached, Alvarez changed his mind, but he was unable to start his truck and move it off the tracks. Instead, he jumped to safety while the crowded commuter train struck his vehicle, which was still on the track, and over 200 were injured and 11 were killed. Another incident that I recall quite clearly, and occurred only a few days prior to my retirement. I was guarding a parent in the burn ward at the hospital. He had shot his wife in the head while they sat in the family vehicle. He then threw flammable liquids on the vehicle to set it on fire in an attempt to cover the crime. In his frenzy to set the fire, he spilled flammable liquids on himself so that when he threw the igniter inside the vehicle, the fire blew back on him, burning him with third-degree burns on several areas of his body. Now, the family was pending a divorce. They had two young children who, in this one act, lost both their mother and their father. And they'll be forever left with that knowledge. And then general consensus is that most of these parents committing these horrific crimes have numerous arrests, extensive criminal history, or drug or alcohol background. And it's just not true. I mean, that was one factor I was unprepared. In many of these cases I reference in my presentations and in my research, most of these parents never committed a crime before these incidents, even horrific crimes where they murdered their own children. These parents had no criminal history whatsoever.
Wow. Yeah. And, you know, and again, I think this is all information that people need to know, that parents need to know. But I think also, I mean, our law enforcement, you know, needs to know, our judges, the attorneys, they need to know that this isn't, you know, as you said, isolated incidences that are happening because of these are, you know, horrible criminal or, you know, whatever issues. No, this is just parents that have been pushed beyond a limit and just lost it, and something snaps. As a police officer yourself, you know, what do you think is the most difficult scenario now in family law for any police officer to deal with? And has it changed from when you were in the force versus now?
Well, let me just go back before I answer that question, because you had two parts to your last question. You also asked me, what do I think the future holds for us?
Yes, thank you.
I think this is our future. These incidences I just related, that's our future. If we don't right now start holding parents accountable for the small actions in court on excuse me, just a moment. If we don't help parents control their behavior on the small incidences, we're encouraging them to take bigger and wider strides into these horrific crimes. So that's our future. This is a glimpse of our future. And that's, so I'm going to now, with having said that, I'm now going to tell you what's the most difficult, even just thinking about it right now. So child homicides are the most difficult for law enforcement, especially in dealing with family law, where children are murdered by their own parents in the ultimate act of retribution, revenge, and parental alienation. Horrific.
I know.
Even more disturbing to those of us in law enforcement background is the increase in number of child homicides. On average, 450 children are murdered every year by their parents. This isn't just a number. This is a 3 decades review of FBI homicide data that was reviewed by Northeastern University criminologists who came to this conclusion. We're talking 450 children a year murdered by their own parents. And USA Today was preparing an article on parents who do the unthinkable, kill their children, back in September of 2014. In 2015, there was 1,853 child homicides. Even the Department of Justice, Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention, reported that children under the age of 5 are more likely to die of a homicide than cancer in this country. And just to clarify, the United States is not alone in horrific crimes dealing with family law. It's not, family law is not confined to a single gender country or even continent. And it's just an epidemic now around the world. And, you know, unfortunately, due to time constraints, because we're almost out of time, you know, I can't deal with this more fully. But I did try to make the point that family law is a global issue, not just here in this country, which is the perspective that many have, unaware of just how big the issue of family law is.
Yeah. And again, for any of you out there, and again, as Catherine said, you know, there's so many subjects here that if we had the time, we could do the rest of the day on hitting each of these subjects. But again, if you go to her website, go to custodycalculations.com, and you can learn more about it. You can, you know, slash contact if you want to get directly in contact with Catherine and talk about these subjects, or if you have a situation in which you want to see if, you know, if it's something that she can help with. Now, I think we've got time for probably one more question, and that is, if you could give parents one piece of advice, what would it be?
Well, I want to borrow a line from the Huffington Post, which says, marriages come and go, but divorce is forever. And truer words were never spoken. In today's divorce environment, you cannot afford to enter the divorce process uneducated and naive. You're going to need more information for more resources, not just an attorney. Participate in support groups, telephonically if you have to, if you do not have a group near you. There's groups like on Facebook that you can participate in, parental alienation awareness organizations have chapters in many states. International Support Network of Alienated Families is another great resource. They're also on Facebook, and they do telephonic support groups. But reach out. You know, if you don't have the funds, there's support groups that can help you. Check to see what counseling might be available specific to divorce. But, you know, reach out and get as much information as you can. Be prepared as you can. Hope for the best, but be prepared for the worst.
All right. And Catherine, if anybody needs to get a hold of you other than the website that I gave, how else can they get in touch with you?
Well, you know, I have an email address, divorcecoachservices, that's plural, services at yahoo.com, or you can give me a call at 702-675-5120. And I do some free consults on a limited basis. And if you didn't have time to catch all this information, it's all on our website, custodycalculations.com. And, you know, Alan, thank you so very much for allowing me the opportunity to speak on this important subject and get this information out to parents. I, you know, so appreciate it. And I think you and Matt are doing amazing work.
Well, thank you. And again, I just want to acknowledge you for for doing the work that you're doing. I think that you're helping many, many families, and just keep up the good work.
Thanks so much.
All right. And for everybody out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we will replay one of our most popular holiday shows featuring our interview with Dina Cabrera. And you know what? That's actually been changed. So go to our website, answersforthefamily.com, and tune in. We have a subject that many people had written in and said that they would like to hear it again. So be with us again next Monday. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, or you can subscribe for the show through iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Vimeo. And if you like what you hear, leave a review. It will help us reach more people and be greatly appreciated. And the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page. Check out some of the latest posts, and if you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody, have a wonderful holiday season. Be good human beings. Thank you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.